It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Good Thursday, everyone. Welcome to the VolQuest.com Mailbag Podcast, presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions. If you have a need for roofing or outside, something going on outside with your home, you can call them, get a free estimate. They will take great care of you at Exterior Home Solutions. We certainly thank them for all that they've done for us and their continued support of VolQuest.com. You can give them a buzz today or reach them at ExteriorHomeSolutions.com, and you can get a free estimate from the guys at Exterior Home Solutions, and they will take great care of you. They do fantastic work, and again, we appreciate them. They've been in business since 1999, and they've been taking care of us for a while now at VolQuest.com. We appreciate them. With Austin Price, Rob Lewis, and Grant Ramey, I'm Brent Hubbs. It is the Mailbag Edition, guys. We've got plenty of questions to get to, so we'll dive right in, and we'll start with Doolittle Vol. What is your favorite and least favorite memory from the third Saturday in October? Rob Lewis, you want to start with that one?
It's pretty hard to top 22. I've seen a bunch of them, but I don't know that you could top, you know, I don't remember a better one than that one. And I guess the worst one easy was, was it 6-3, 9-6? What was it? Yep. 1990.
9-6.
I couldn't remember if it was 6-3 or low light. So those are.
Yeah, and the field goal block heard around the world. Because you could hear that one in South Knoxville, North Knoxville, and West Knoxville when that ball was blocked. That one is the worst. The runner up for that for me, Grant Ramey, is Corey Anderson's fumble through the back of the end zone.
That's the 6-3 that I thought somebody was. I thought Rob was mentioning.
Yeah, that one was rough. And then another runner up for me in terms of a good deal. I mean, obviously the win 2 years ago was huge. The 95 game was a lot of fun. There was an exercising of a lot of demons in 95, much the same way that there was in 22. Different style games, but certainly very similar in terms of the emotions that went through that game. So Tennessee's not had nearly enough good ones. We'll see if Tennessee can have a good one coming up on Saturday. AP, you grew up in this area. Any other games strike you? 16-14 and 85. I know you weren't around, but that was the highlights. Around. That was a good one.
I was just two. 22 and 95 are similar just because they were the ending of long streaks.
Right.
Disappointment wise, I would tell you David Palmer going for 2 in 93. Or was it 93, 94, whatever?
Yeah, no, that was 93. That one was painful because Tennessee outplayed Alabama the entire day in 93.
Yeah, Alabama kind of escaped with the tie, and it was back before they allowed overtime, and just, the ties were just like, you know, it's like kissing your sister. Like, you just don't do that, right? Like, I mean, it's no fun. And, I think any win, is to be celebrated. Even like you go back to that 98 season. Peerless taking that kickoff back. That was a one they had to kind of gut through to win, kind of like last Saturday, doesn't matter how you get there. You win by 50, you win by one. Just like when you can beat one of your biggest rivals, as Doug Dickey used to say, then, it's a good day.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Let's move on here to Volunteered 87. One recruit from the Florida game that Tennessee moved the most with, Austin Price.
TK, the receiver from Mississippi. He's gotten really close with Faison Brandon. And, if he makes it back in this weekend, now he had kind of insinuated that there was a chance he might, then I think Tennessee's got a real shot there to potentially land him. And so I thought they made a huge move with him last weekend. So I think this is the weekend where they make more moves just because there's more kids here. And you have somebody like Isaiah Campbell coming in who Tennessee's trying to land, who they've been working on for a long time. So, with the 26, it's definitely go TK.
All right. Is NIL a big part of golf recruiting, or is Coach Webb just on the midst of a tear? Volunteered 87 wants to know, AP.
It's both. It's both. And of course, Tennessee, landed another one. They've got three in a row now, and one of them flipping in the 25 class. So, it's a part of it. It's not an end all be all. I think it's more the culture and that type of stuff with the secondary sports, you know, but I do think it is still very much a part of it. I mean, you know, Callaway, different people, different manufacturers can be heavily involved in that type of stuff. And so it's definitely a part of it, but it's also the fact that, you know, I think, you know, Coach Webb is for a 50-year-old guy, he doesn't look 50 nor act 50. And, you know, he's kind of got, you know, he's kind of got the swag, as the kids say.
AP, can we get a shirt update? What's the logo we got here?
I'm wearing Fisher's Island today.
Looks. I thought it was Long Island for a moment.
No, it's Fisher's Island.
Fisher's Island. I got it.
It's number three on AP's current list of top places I've played.
Okay. Appreciate the update.
That's what we all wanted 6 minutes into this.
Also, by the way, my ears were burning on the Tuesday podcast. I'm not a coward. I'm here. Now Tim Watts is not here. He's the coward. But I digress.
Grant, I don't know if you know the answer or anybody knows the answer to this, but Volunteer Day said has one more question. Is there a preset ticket split from the percentage standpoint for hosting a college football playoff game? Meaning if Oregon hosted us, we would get 10% of their 54,000 tickets. And if we hosted, they would get 10% of our 100,000 tickets. Or would those be allotted using a different method? I have no idea the answer to that question.
That's a great question, though.
I have no idea. That would be a good question to attempt to get answered. But no, I have no idea.
That honestly sounds like a Minnesota Vol question, because he always asks ones. You're just like, it's a good question. But God,
Yeah, that one was – that's a good question. I know that the NCAA has a hand in kind of the ticket pricing from the standpoint of you're not going to be able to gouge – you're not going to be able to just have astronomical face values for whoever's hosting playoff games. You can't like, hey, if your regular season tickets, you know, averages $150, you can't come back and say, hey, your playoff ticket's going to be $450 a ticket. I know there's some parameters that the NCAA has there to keep that from happening, but I don't know how the split works. I'll see if I can find out an answer to that. That is a good question. Next question here, thoughts on the lack of holding penalties called on opponents when playing Tennessee football. I don't know if you guys saw that thread, that the poster went through and got, but pretty amazing if, and I'm assuming all that's accurate, Grant Ramey, that James Pierce has not been held any more than he's been held in the last 10 games that Tennessee's played and any of those other defensive linemen up front.
And it's more glaring because of the number of times that Tennessee has been called for it. What was it, three times in the first half against Florida Saturday night, and it feels like every one of them is huge and drive killers when your offense has struggled the way Tennessee has the last couple weeks. Yeah, it's – I mean, I don't know that anybody has an explanation for it. I think people want Josh Heupel to talk about it publicly. I don't think that really gets anything accomplished. Maybe it brings a little bit more attention to it, but I don't know if that changes anything. Like, all I know about like dealing with officials from the basketball side, I've watched Rick Barnes walk into press conferences being on the phone with the SEC, you know, 10, 15 minutes, whatever, 20 minutes after a game ends. Like, that's how he does it. He gets on the phone and he complains and they file stuff and send them clips and whatever they want changed. But I assume that Josh and his staff would handle it the same way.
And
like,
and you know what? Nothing gets done when you right. do that. You make $9 million a year. You take the $100,000 fine. You do what Phil Jackson did years ago when Michael Jordan didn't get calls. And then you complain and bitch and whine. And guess what? The next game, you hear that whistle a lot more. I guarantee you, if you drew attention to it, that I think that there would be more an opportunity for flags to be thrown. Now, again, it's going to cost you money, and nobody right. wants to do that. But that's what I would do, making $9 million a year, is draw attention to it, take my $150,000, $250,000, whatever fine it is, call it a day, and draw more of an attention to it. Because when the spotlight is put on, it's a lot harder to overlook.
So you want him out there with a TV screen and a pointer at a press conference, breaking down clips?
Brother, I'm just saying, like, again, we're assuming that everything the poster said was accurate. I mean, I've not went back and looked at it, right? I mean, I'm just saying, but I'm just telling you, in professional sports, and let's face it, they get paid like professional sports coaches do. The professional sports coaches would draw an attention to this. They would take their fine. They would gladly pay their fine. And then it would at least get cleaned up for a game or two.
I mean, technically, Josh could mention it without being critical of the officials and just say, we haven't had an opposing team called for a hold in X number yes. of weeks. That's not
that's
a criticism. Correct. That's just stating
correct.
A fact.
That's the fact. That's 100% correct. Right. Grant's right. Nobody wants to go that route, though, because nobody wants to pay the fine or any of that stuff.
No. I mean, it's just like the whole, you know, send in plays, Rob Lewis on Monday after games or after a basketball game. That, you know, you get the word back from the officials. Yeah, we probably missed that one. Okay.
And I mean, it's not like they reverse the call. You know?
Right. Makes you feel worse somehow.
Yeah. I mean, look, they're going to miss them. I mean, I understand that. It's human. Nobody's perfect. But it's like, it's almost at the point, like, I don't know if I won't even want to hear, yeah, we messed that one up. Like, sorry about it. My bad. You know what I mean? Because there's so much on the line in these
games. You don't have to hear it. That you already know it.
Yeah, you do absolutely know it. S. Pitt Vol, the South Pittsburgh Vol. Six games in, how surprised are you that Tennessee is so bad on offense? It feels like a good offensive play. With a good offensive play, this team would be a lock for playoffs with the offense. But the offense has been a glaring failure in SEC play so far. I've said this. I said it on the Rewind, Rob. I've said it multiple places. If you'd have told Tennessee fans in August your defense is not going to give up more than 20 points in a game the first half of the season, Tennessee fans would have said we have the most dominant football team in college football. That's certainly not been the case. How surprised are you where this Tennessee offense is going into week seven?
I'm really surprised. I mean, shocked. I mean, I guess, you know, part of that's, you know, my own fault for just, you know, believing a lot of things were going to happen on faith, I guess. But I'm really surprised. I'm as surprised as any fan out there. I mean, I thought that they would be really good.
The defense is exactly what I thought they'd be. And the offense is nowhere close to where I thought they'd be. I thought it'd look a lot more like 22. And it just doesn't. I think it's in part offensive line, it's in part receivers, and it's in part Nico. And you know, that's, you know, can it get better? I think it can. I think it can. And a lot of it just stems from confidence. You know, it's kind of like that shooter that, you know, just can't make anything. And he sees a few go through the hoop and it just opens everything up. Like, you know, I mean, the other night, what did we say with like 4 minutes to go, Grant? Like the lid's off. They finally scored late in the third quarter. I mean, like, and guess what? How many did they score from there to the house? I mean, like, when you start to see a few plays go your way, you see a big shot hubs go your way, how much does it make you just, like, the stress is off? And a lot of times, like, with kids and quarterbacks and different, you know, kickers or whatever, like, they can put so much pressure on themselves, it's to their detriment. So I think if you could make a big play or two early Saturday, you know, it probably would go a long way to the offense, you know, just feeling more comfortable.
Grant, do you agree with Josh Heupel that they're close on offense? Do you think that's an accurate statement?
I think receivers running open like they did against Florida is a good sign. And missing those receivers hurts. But it means that you got guys open and you just got to make the shot. You got to hit it downfield. And Nico has shown that he can do that. I don't care if you're running open against Chattanooga or Florida or whoever the opponent is. If you hit the shot, you hit the shot. And he's shown that he can make those throws. I think he'll get back to making those throws. Like AP said, I think he does need to see one go down. He needs to hit one of those shots. I don't think they're that far away. They've been awful offensively the last 2 weeks. I don't think Josh is crazy saying he feels like they're close. Like, if they score on that first possession against Florida, I think that changes the way that first half goes. I think it could change everything. Like, if they hit one of those deep shots, which they weren't terribly far away from, it wasn't some crazy overthrow, it was a half stride or whatever. Like, if you can just hit one of those, then it makes all the difference in the world. Now, Oklahoma, I thought the offense was fine at Oklahoma. They had a big play at Dante. They had a big play at Prue McCoy. They ran the football down Oklahoma's throat when they had to run the football down Oklahoma's throat and take over that game. And then they kind of took their foot off the gas a little bit. So I don't think it's been a glaring failure in SEC play as a whole. It's just been a rough couple of weeks, and we'll see if they're actually as close as Josh thinks they are.
See, I agree with Grant. Like, I don't think it's – like, because at Oklahoma, you did what you needed to do. They did hit some big splash plays. They hit two with Brew and then the one to Dante. And, you know, I agree with Grant. Like, it's not as glaring as everyone makes it out to be. But at the same time, it's because it's not 22 where Jalen Hyatt was just running routes on air and there was nobody out there. And then Brew was bodying up people and getting big time catches and all that stuff. I think that's why people are like, you know. I mean, like,
the reality is it's glaring until you make a play.
Right.
Correct. So do you take a shot early, Hubs? Because if you do and you hit it, then boom, right? But if you don't,
if it's there, I think you got to take a shot. I mean, you got to be who you're going to be, right? You got to hope that you make a play. So, I mean, if they give you an opportunity early, I think you got to take the shot. I love the rollout stuff freeing him up, allowing him to set his feet and throw it long. I mean, I thought the over route to Chaz Nimrod, that was just a near miss, I guess, in the fourth quarter. I thought that was – I like that. Like roll him out and let him throw it that way and see if they can get the matchup that they like there. So but we'll see how they elect to play it. I mean, that was a good opening drive. They just shot themselves in the foot, which has become all too common for this offense for sure.
Well, I heard a lot of people say last week, like, I mean, why are we not running the ball in the fourth quarter? Like, why are we taking all these deep shots and being aggressive? Like, why were we not just going to the Oklahoma game plan? And I mean, like, I sat up here last week and I said, be who you are. So I mean, that's who they want to be, is, you know, taking some shots and that type of thing.
It's not like they threw it every play. I mean,
correct.
You know,
they did take some deep shots.
The also problem too is they had about 6 yards rushing in the fourth quarter. Like, they weren't moving the ball on the ground in the fourth quarter at all, and Florida was selling out to stop the run. You got to make a play. It's like second and seven in the fourth quarter at Arkansas. I don't have a problem with that play call where they threw it over the middle. I have a problem with the fact that they threw the ball in the dirt. Squirrel had to dive for it. He suffered an AC joint separation or injury there. Like, he's open. That's an easy throw. That's a routine play that you have to make in a critical situation there that they just didn't execute. And you know, that's not asking for anything crazy to be done. That's just asking to throw the ball 8 yards across the middle to an open receiver for a first down. So, I mean, I don't think you can just line up in this day and age of college football and say, hey, we're going to line up with our offensive line, with our run game, and we're going to cram it down your throat in a 4-minute offense at the end. I think that's hard for Tennessee to do regularly on a consistent basis. I think you have to throw it a little bit. I think everybody does.
They also just kind of
everywhere else.
They also just kind of feel out of rhythm. And I think that's the coaching, the play calling. It just feels like they have a lot of the pieces they have. It's like they're still trying to figure out how to put these pieces together. And sometimes it feels like, and I guess it's more glaring because sometimes it feels like Heupel in the past, it's like they can't call a bad play. Everything's working. Like they've moved the ball at such a rate and scored at such a rate. It's like, what can they not do play calling wise? And now it's struggling. And it's also more glaring because they haven't given up a touchdown in the first half since the Clinton administration. And they're still down 3-0 at halftime the last 2 weeks. And the red zone defenses, I mean, 19 trips and they've only given up 6 touchdowns, and they're stripping teams on the 1 yard line every single week, it feels like, and they're about to get a safety every single week. It's more glaring offensively, those struggles, because of how elite and how productive the defense has been.
Yeah, I mean, Rob, I feel like at times they're just impatient. It's like, hey, we hit a couple of 7 yard outs. Now we got to throw it deep. You know, now we got to take a vertical deep shot down the middle of the field, or we got to throw a deep crosser and protect for 4 or 5 seconds. Like, I don't think with this offense they've always taken the easy completion to stay in rhythm.
I think it feels like that too, because they never hit any of them.
That's true too.
Good point. That's why it feels like that. I mean, that's why it feels.
Hit a couple of them and you're feeling totally different.
They've not hit a single one of them. They hit since Dante Thornton and Brew at Oklahoma. If they hit anything down, I mean, like, seriously down the field in against Arkansas or Florida. I mean, maybe I'm misremembered one.
They had the 42 yarder at on the last drive
on the scramble.
Yeah, on the scramble drill. Absolutely.
I mean, as far as, you know, in the flow of the game, 7 minutes left in the second quarter. You know, second and eight, drop back play action.
They've not done since the Brew play at Oklahoma.
They've not. I mean, that's why it feels that way, because they never hit one.
That's a good point.
And that's the difference. Where that team was at Oklahoma, Brew makes that catch by his fingertips. And you can go back and look. There's a picture from the Florida game, Chaz, where it looks like the ball's on the same spot in his fingertips, and you can't make it. And sometimes you're just, you know, sometimes momentum's not going your way, whatever. You're just not making those plays. Maybe they get back.
And it compounds, snowballs, because – We've all talked about, man, second 10 feels hard with this offense.
Yes.
And so, man, you feel like, man, they wasted one there. But, I mean, if you hit one every once in a while, they're not wasted. But, I mean, Grant, second 10 just feels like death by 1,000 cuts.
Grant just brought up the fact that they've not given up an offensive touchdown in the first half all year long.
It's like, six.
It's Vanderbilt of last year. Or I don't know if Vanderbilt scored a touchdown in the first half. Maybe they did.
No, I think it's 8 straight games right now.
So – the point is, if you can get that again somehow this week and the offense gives you anything in the first half, Neyland Stadium will be bubbling over. You know what I mean? Like, if Alabama didn't score a touchdown in the first half, which means they're only held to a field goal or two, and your offense does anything, like, Neyland Stadium will be bubbling over. into the river at halftime going into the second half. So can the offense do anything this week? I mean, I will say this. If you went and watched the video that the VFL Films put out, and you hear Dylan Sampson talking to the offense, you know, and he's talking about how great the defense is playing. We've got to give them something. Like, the offense knows, and the leadership of the offense knows. Like, the defense is carrying them. They're trying. They just, I mean, can they get it done?
All right. Hot Rod Vaughn wants to know, who's your first half of the season MVP for offense and defense? I think we're all taking Dylan Sampson for offense, right? So we don't need to debate that one.
Correct.
Give me your first half of the season MVP on defense.
Jermaud McCoy.
I can see that one. I'll go Peely just for some variety, but no arguments with Jermaud McCoy.
Yeah, I don't disagree with Jermaud McCoy. I mean, he's been the best transfer addition on this roster for sure. He's been outstanding. Competition Orange, elimination game is a buzzy term this year. Do you get the sense that this team views it as one? If so, is there any change in game week preparations as are part of the process? You better stay the same and hold. I mean, Austin, you've talked about it for weeks. The reality is it's a week-to-week season.
It is.
I mean, listen, do I think you're completely eliminated if you lose this game? You don't know that, okay? Just go play. I mean, both teams need a win. Line up and go play. I think you've got to shelf all of the whole, you know, postseason playoff talk type stuff and just go play the football game, Grant. I don't think you need to overwhelm anybody with a bunch of playoff talk or – start talking about how this is a must win and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't think any wholesale changes. I think it would be good to feel some desperation a little bit because of, you know, you lose at Arkansas and you push your chips to the middle of the table against Florida and against Alabama. If you lose at Alabama, you're pushing all your chips to the middle of the table at Georgia in November, and you know what kind of task that's going to be, and you know you have to take care of business in every other game too leading up to that and after that. Yeah, don't completely change who you are, no wholesale changes, but I think it would be okay to have a little sense of, like, it's time to start taking care of business and trying to figure out what kind of football team you are.
Yeah.
Sam Smith, 2233, do you have Jermaud McCoy following Ryan Williams around on the field on Saturday, or do you think Tennessee mixes it up? Austin, Tennessee is not one to flip their corners.
They're not, so. And I would say that that'll be the case this week as well. I would say it'll be Ricky Gibson sometimes. I think it'll be Jermaud McCoy. I think Ricky Gibson's playing really good football too. Like, people just – I mean, everybody sees McCoy. For some reason, teams continue to throw at him, and he makes a bunch of plays, whether it be deflections or, of course, the pick at Oklahoma. But, you know, Ricky Gibson's playing really good football too. I mean, this is the best set of corners Tennessee's had since when, Brent? I mean, like, you're a better knowledge of this than I am, and I can start thinking back, but I mean.
Somebody asked that question the other night in the chat. I don't have a real good answer for you. I
mean, is it maybe the best they've ever had
in
modern football?
I mean, at one point they lined up with
Dale Carter and.
Yeah, but I mean, at one point you also had Cam Sutton and Emmanuel Mosley, who are both 10-year vets in the NFL. That's recent. Those were your two corners recently. Now, nobody liked them at Tennessee because they didn't think they played well enough, but they were talented players for sure.
I think people like Cam Sutton.
You know, part of the difference here is you're so good up front that it helps it. The one thing I will give these two corners credit for is they're playing to the defensive line's strengths. And what I mean by that is they're squatting on routes. You know, they're not playing a 10-yard cushion with a defensive front that can get after the quarterback. They're playing more aggressive coverage, which I will, you know, that's been my biggest thing is you've had guys line up 5 yards off the ball on third and seven, and then they back up 10 more yards, and it's like, okay, he caught it for 9 yards and got tackled. It's a first down. I mean, that's not the way they play. I mean, Jermaud McCoy has played two slants this season, Rob Lewis, one against NC State, I think, or Kent State, and then he played one Saturday night that Tennessee fans have been waiting on a corner at Tennessee to play the slant like that for a decade plus. And, you know, that's the difference is just how aggressive those corners are playing, particularly McCoy.
Yeah, I mean, and also says something about, you know, fans have wondered about forever, is it, you know, Tennessee's philosophy or is it how the corners play? I think you kind of got your answer a little bit, but with McCoy this fall.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing is when what you've learned is when you have added talent in the secondary and on the defensive line, then it alters how Temp Banks wants to play defense. I'm not sure he wants to play the way he's been playing for the last couple of years where he gives up those third and nines. But, you know, I think, you know, based off of the personnel, maybe he felt like he had to make sure they didn't get beat over the top.
I've got a submission. Who played opposite of Jason Allen in 2003?
Jason Allen Stewart?
He was a corner, right, Jason Allen? I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I mean, nobody that jumped off the page. Nobody that jumped
anyway, that defensive backfield as a whole, just going down the list, Jason Allen, Rashad Baker, Jabari Greer, Mark Jones, Antoine Stewart, Jabril Wilson.
It's pretty good. Jabari played
corner, and he played corner in the NFL. That's pretty good. I mean, Jason Allen and Jabari were two pretty good corners there as well. So that's a good pull there, Grant Ramey. Well done. Thank you. I forgot about that group.
My formative days.
Naza Nick here wants to know, which streak is more likely to continue this week? Vols defense not allowing a first half touchdown, or the offense being shut out for a third straight game? Who you got on the streak? Who's on the line here?
I'm going to go the most likely to continue is the defense. I just have a hard time believing that they don't score a touchdown in the first half again. Like, if they do, then I may leave at halftime.
I'm completely the opposite. I think it's way more likely that this offense woes continue.
It's hard for me to say defense because of how daunting it feels like facing Jalen Milroe can be if he's going to be, you know, if he plays up to his potential. But at the same time, it's hard for me to believe they haven't scored a point in the first half of the last two games, and I just sat there and watched it happen. Like, it's still hard to wrap your mind around that and think it's going to happen again.
Or maybe it should be option C, neither.
Well, right. I said this will be, by as crazy as it is to say or hear, it's by far the worst SEC defense they've seen so far at Alabama, at least by the numbers, and it's not close.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's harder for the defense to pitch a shutout because I think – this is the first team Tennessee's playing that has a guy on the field that can score from anywhere on the field.
Yeah, two guys, really.
You know, and Tennessee's been in a situation they could bend and not break. You can bend in this one, and a bend might be a 65-yard touchdown if you're not careful. So that's my concern about Tennessee pitching a shutout in the first half of this game, just because a jump ball can be a touchdown. And Tennessee's not played a skill guy who can score from anywhere on the field until now. I mean, maybe you could say Taylen Green, but I mean, for all the talk about Concepcion at NC State, and they have not played a receiver that can do anything like what Ryan Williams has done to this point in the season. So we'll see there. All right, we got plenty more questions to get to. We'll get to those on the other side. But first, a quick message from our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions.
Get Neyland loud this football season with Exterior Home Solutions, East Tennessee's first choice for exterior renovations.
Thanks again to our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions for their continued support of the VolQuest.com podcast, 2-Minute Drill, and so many things they do for us at VolQuest.com. Be sure and check them out at ExteriorHomeSolutions.com for any of your needs. You can give them a buzz. You can shoot them an email there off the website, get a free estimate for whatever you need for your exterior home, whether it's roofing, siding, windows, whatever it is, they can take care of you at Exterior Home Solutions. BDB88 wants to know, I've noticed lately there's been some talk about Lance Hurd being better suited for guard. Do you believe that is the case? And if so, do you think the staff would consider moving him there in the off season? I do not see that move. What say you?
No.
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, I think he's a tackle. I think he, you know, should be better in year two in this system. You hope he didn't have an off-season procedure this year that slows him down a little bit, but I think he's a tackle at Tennessee moving forward next year. David Keith fan, if Vols split upcoming Bama and UGA matchups and went out, are they playoff bound? Does two losses put Tennessee in the SEC championship game? Haven't seen Cam Seldon in a couple of weeks. Is this lack of preparation? Are they looking for a red shirt? AP, you want to start with Seldon and work backwards on those questions?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Seldon's healthy. I mean, I don't know why he's not played the last couple of weeks, but he didn't even return kicks last week, which, I mean, you know, makes you do wonder, like, you know, does he want a red shirt? I don't think Tennessee's thinking about red shirting him. What was question 3 and 4 and 5?
Question two, does two losses put Tennessee in the SEC championship game?
I don't think that Tennessee's got to me, they have to be 11-1 to be in the SEC championship game, unless carnage, a bunch of carnage happens. And then maybe, but then it comes back down to tiebreakers, in my opinion. And we'll see what happens with all that. I do think 10-2, if they split, they'd have a really good shot. Now, is it fail proof? No, because guess what? If Miami runs the table, then loses to Clemson in the ACC championship game, 11-1 Miami, 11-1 Clemson, they probably get 2 in the ACC.
And that knocks an SEC team out.
Notre Dame, you know.
You beat SC, you beat Southern Cal, the Irish are in.
Yeah, I mean, like the Big Ten's going to get 3. I know they're hoping for 4. I don't see Indiana. I don't care how easy their schedule is. I don't see them figuring out a way to get in, even if they're 11-1. Like, you know, 11-1 and playing nobody, I just don't see it. But that's me, you know. But either way, like, there's a path where Tennessee at 10-2 does not get in. But I do think at 10-2, they'd be a better than 50% shot, in my opinion, just because I think there's going to be a lot of – as much turmoil as we've seen in the first part of the season with upsets, I think the back part with even more conference games and more head-to-head matchups is going to see even more.
ESPN, shameless plug, there's going to be content on our website laying all this stuff out based on ESPN's playoff predictor, where you can click on a team and they give you the 3 biggest games left. For Tennessee, it's obviously Alabama, Georgia, and now it's Vanderbilt all of a sudden. And you pick, you know, win this game, lose this game, win this game, whatever, and it gives you different percentages based on those paths. And if Tennessee is 10-2, I don't think you want to make the SEC championship game and risk a third loss.
But don't you think we had this discussion? I had a discussion with somebody the other day. I just feel like if you make the SEC championship game, that you're going to make the playoff.
Right.
Like,
you shouldn't have that loss count against you, basically.
Correct. And I don't think it will. Just like if you make the Big Ten championship game, like, I just don't, like, because there are no divisions, you're never going to see like a 11-1 East champ versus an 8-4 West champ or whatever that we saw years ago. Everybody's going to be like 11-1, 10-2 playing each other. I just think if you make the championship game, you're going to be in the playoff.
But anyway, if there was a split and they're 10-2, the percentages, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it was like 74-75% that you're in, and then like 50-50, like whether you host or go on the road in the first round. So I think split 10-2, you know, nothing crazy happens, which we could be headed for a undefeated Navy against an undefeated Army the week after the playoff bracket is set, because the bracket's set before Army Navy week, if I'm not mistaken, which would be insanity to try to figure that out. So crazy stuff could happen, but I think if they split, go 10-2, I think they'd be in.
I think, Rob, if you're Tennessee, Austin said this earlier in the week, I think if you're Tennessee, you want Texas to run the table. Let them be unbeaten and beat up a bunch of teams along the way, right? Give Georgia a second loss. Give A&M a second loss. I mean, Texas is going to get in. Unless they just fall apart in the second half of the season, which nobody sees that coming. I think you want them to be the landslide one. That's fine. But wipe a bunch of people out with second losses or even the score up with 2-loss teams by what they can do with their schedule.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, don't disagree. I mean, Tennessee, you know, we always talk about, you know, Tennessee catches Alabama and Georgia every year. Well, this year, you know, they benefit by not playing, you know, Texas first year. And whereas Alabama and Georgia are both catching them. And, you know, maybe the best Texas team in a couple of decades. So, I mean, the schedule rarely seems to work in Tennessee's favor when you're talking about the conference. But this season, you know, maybe it does a little.
A lot of people thought that the playoff was going to ruin college football's regular season. I think it's made it even better.
100%.
Because even in the 4-team playoff, Saturday is an elimination game for Tennessee or Alabama. Whoever loses that, you're out. If you can lose this game if you're Tennessee on Saturday and just hope for chaos. Like, just root for chaos across the board, and you could still be in the conversation. I mean, you'll still be in the conversation going to Georgia in November, assuming you take care of business in other games, but I think it's just made it better.
Well, it's made it so good that there's no doubt this thing's going to go to 16 teams at some point.
And I can't wait for it.
I mean, there's nothing that's diminished the college football season with a 12-team playoff, and nothing's going to diminish it with a 16-team. It just means more money for everybody, and we all know everybody needs more money. So 16's coming faster than probably anybody initially thought.
To me, there's more games that matter because Boise State's trying to get in, Army-Navy's trying to get in. There's all these teams that we would not even have a clue about or think about in previous setups because they wouldn't be relevant to a playoff. Now they are.
Nashville 615. What defensive looks do you anticipate from Alabama? Do you think it's going to be more of the 4-2 or the 3-2-6 defense, or will it look more like Florida daring us to throw deep? The offensive line is regressing in a way that no position under Heupel has experienced. Why do you think that's the case? Is the effort where it needs to be? Is Glenn Ellerbe too much of a player's coach? And do you think Tennessee can run the ball against Alabama?
I do think they can run it against Alabama. Listen, I mean, the offensive line's not been good enough. You know, I mean, Glenn's in charge of that room. So, you know, thus it falls on him, just like at the end of the day, it falls on the head coach because he's in charge of the team. So, they have moments, but, you know, they also have moments where you're just like, oh, this is killing this offense.
Yes, you're going to have to run the football. You're going to have to, because if Tennessee can't, then I don't know what you're doing. I would expect Alabama takes some cues from Arkansas and Florida and tries to throw at Tennessee what those two teams did, because they had so much success with it. At the same time, Kalen DeBoer's talking this week about the secondary and their struggles, which is weird to think about with an Alabama football team, and the defensive struggles, I guess, as a whole, and getting off the field on third down and tackling stuff like that. So if they're going to dare you to take deep shots, then take deep shots. And if you hit one, maybe it changes the game.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're more rooted in a 3-3-5, in a three-man front. They'll walk up and play some four-man front. I think they're more comfortable in that three-man look. I'll give Florida credit. Florida just said, hey, we're not changing who we are. We know two teams have done what they've done to you the last couple of weeks, but here's what we're going to do. We're going to line up, and we're going to come try to win first and second down. We're going to pressure you and see if you can beat us throwing the football, if you can get it off before we can get there. That's the way they elected play. They got away with it because Tennessee couldn't hit some of those. I don't know if Alabama – I think Alabama is much more comfortable in a three-man front, walking up some into a four-man front, not living in a four- or five-man front the way Florida was throughout that game. So we'll see. Tennessee's seen everything, and obviously the odd fronts have given them problems. They've got to see if they can attack it and handle it better. Grant, this question's tailor-made for you. Barb's Chips and Dip. If you were athletic director for a day, what is the first thing you would do, Grant Ramey?
I would come up with every stadium renovation idea I could think of and try to put it in motion. Why not? I don't know. Shout out to the username, first of all. Shout out to the old Barb's Chip Dip Player of the Week or whatever that was. But I don't know. One day, I don't know what you could accomplish in one day that would really make it worthwhile, worth doing or whatever.
Rob Lewis, I think I'd go make a bank deposit based on the salary that yeah. Danny White's making right now. The first thing I'd probably do on day one is go make a bank deposit.
Or just go get $20 out of my checking account and look at get a receipt and see what my ready balance was.
I don't – by the way, Rob's got this sun coming in. I don't know if that's E.T.'s finger or he's pulling a Dr. Evil. $1 million with the sun.
Let's roll here to – this is a good screen name. This comes from everybody's favorite show, Seinfeld. No, everybody's second favorite show, Seinfeld. AskMan75 wants to know, do you guys have any stats regarding Jackson Ross punting left-footed versus right-footed? I've got no idea. But do you think you could see a fake this week? Do we think there's a fake coming in Tennessee's punt game? I'm going to say no on that one, unless it's totally desperation time. I just wanted to get the screen name in there.
I don't have any stats at all, but I try to make a note, try to make a point to look every time. I don't know that I've seen the guy kick left footed this year. I'm not saying he hasn't, and I'm not saying that I've watched him every single time.
I thought he kicked left footed the other night.
Yeah, I think he's kicked a couple. What he's got to do, whether it's right or left foot, is he can't kick a line drive, you know, about 12 feet in the air to a guy standing at midfield to return a punt. If you're going to rugby style it, get it away from him and let it bounce about 10 times. If you're not going to rugby style it, kick it higher in the air and give your coverage teams a chance. Pretty remarkable that in those two punt returns, that's more than Tennessee has given up in the Heupel era and what they gave up in the fourth quarter with those two
returns. And they gave up a little something to Oklahoma, too. I mean, nothing, you know, didn't – weren't mm-hmm. gashed, but, you know, 20, 25 yards. It's just unusual because in 4 years, you just haven't seen that.
It's incredibly poetic that the defense has been as good as it's been, and the offense finally gets some points on the board in the second half, and then the punt team fails you after being pretty solid. I mean, that's people talk about battered ball syndrome. I don't blame them for having them when stuff happens. Like, I also don't think punt return teams have been turning and running enough for Jackson Ross just to take off with it. Have they? It feels like they've been hanging out there.
Yeah, I think there's probably a little bit of that too. So, he's got to kick it better. He can't do what he did in the last two punt returns for sure.
He's not going to run it, Grant. He's got the best arm on the team. Have you not heard?
That's true. Right over the top. Throw it.
ZJ Esvalls, Boo Carter, do you think he locks down the nickel spot or does he eventually move to safety as his career continues?
Nickel.
Yeah, I think he's a nickel all the way. The way he played the other night, he should be the nickel all the way right now. No offense to Christian Harrison, but Boo Carter was really, really good against.
I think nickel's the more valuable spot, right? It's harder to find that guy that's a little bit of the mix of the corner and the safety. Yep. Versus just throwing back there.
I think the poster is, I don't mean to speak for it, but is maybe under the illusion like a nickel. Nickel's not a part-time job anymore. I mean, that's a defined skill set and a well-paid skill set in the NFL.
Yeah, it was a little bit bizarre. Tennessee didn't play nickel every snap last week because they went with that heavier linebacker rotation with three linebackers on the field some because of the two tight end sets. But you're exactly right. I mean, everybody's basing out of a five defensive system and the nickel guy is the most coveted guy in everybody's secondary. Rocky Top 55-27, when the SEC appeared headed for the 9-game conference schedule, the league developed a sound criteria for selecting each team's three permanent opponents. The initial leak seemed very fair and well done. When the schools rejected 9 games, the SEC threw together the 24 and 25 schedules and got lazy in 25 by just flipping it from the 24 schedules. Why was this so poorly done and clearly unbalanced for 24 and 25? Was it unbalanced?
Well, yeah, I mean, look at Missouri's schedule this year, and then guess what? They get the same schedule next year. So, if you in theory had an easy schedule 1 year, unless there's a huge jump for a program, you probably are in tune for another easy schedule. Look at Georgia. Georgia, we'll play Texas at home next year, and they'll play Alabama at home, but they'll go to Tennessee. And they'll get Ole Miss at home too. So, technically, I guess they have tough games, but they at least get three of the four at home next year.
I felt like it was just you're trying to buy some time because they don't know what they want to do with the schedule. Here's the 24 schedule. Let's just flip it for 25, and then we'll set our sights on 26 and try to figure out what we want to do for the long haul there.
Or maybe Nick will retire before we have to do this again, and we can do what we want.
There's some truth to that, I would think. Money-wise, they're not going to go to 9 games until there's more money on the table from TV. So whenever TV comes to the table with more money, then they'll go to 9 games. But they're not going to go 9 games unless they get some additional revenue from TV.
And because of that, the question is, Hubs, is TV willing to pay more money when they're already kind of getting 9 games now, right? They got Michigan, Texas. They're getting, LSU and USC. And pointed out by somebody over on campus, TV's likely to, if they're going to bring more money, they want you to have 9 plus 1. So that means, you would go to 9, but you would keep that Nebraska game. You would keep that Washington home and home.
And there's not a coach in this league who's had any interest in doing that. And they're telling their AD and president that.
Let's just stay at 8-1 then. Yeah. That's what they're saying.
Absolutely they are. So we'll see what happens there. All right, we got to get two more here, a couple more here, and then we'll get out the door. Crayon, is 9-3 a failure?
What color crayon, Hub?
I don't know. I'm going magenta. Is 9-3 a failure? Yes or no?
That's a disappointment. I don't think
it's a disappointment. A failure. That's the best phrase.
Would you not? 7-5 would be a failure. 9-3 is disappointing.
When you've had a defense like this team has, it would be a disappointment because much like, look at 2005, and that was a failure. Your preseason ranked third, you go 5-6 and don't even make a bowl game. On what was the number three defense in the country or something like that? I mean, their defense was really good in 2005.
I mean, I don't want to be a hater, but I think it would be a failure because of what you let get away at Arkansas.
So you predicted a failure before the season started.
Well,
well played, AOP.
Technically, yes. But the way Arkansas happened, as poorly as you played in the first half to go up 14-3 in the third quarter, whatever it was, to have the backup quarterback come in, and you can't get some first downs to melt the clock. You can't get a stop when you got to get a stop. I think it would be a failure just based on the way that game specifically played out and what it cost you, which would have been a playoff berth.
Does Keenan Peely have coaching aspirations?
You know, I could see that, but I mean, you know, I don't think it'll be here. I just think he'll get back to the West Coast, you know, now that his career is going to be over. And I know Tim Banks said he don't think it's over, but man, it's hard to imagine he just wants to keep himself through this.
Yeah.
He should apply for the Cam Rising 8 years of eligibility.
How do they already know he has an eighth year? I'm ignorant on it. I just thought, I'm like, how do you already know? Like that's wild to me.
Didn't I think even Cam Rising came out and was like, eight's too much. Like, this is it. I'm good. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Who's actually calling the plays on Saturday? Josh Heupel or Joey Halsley?
I believe it's Joey Halsley with Josh Heupel input.
Yeah, with a heavy Josh Heupel input, and probably heavier as the game goes on, depending how the offense is played.
Yeah.
What is something you think would benefit this program as a whole? Different staff pieces, different makeup of off-field analysts, different focus on recruiting philosophy. I don't know that they're way off, right, AP? If you hit two deep balls Saturday and you score 35 points, that question's not getting asked, is it?
I don't know. Maybe because the offensive line struggles, to protect, and again, sometimes it's not the O-line, sometimes it's the running backs or the tight ends. But either way, you know, I don't know, Hub. Sometimes it's just better to lay out on a question, and thus I'm going to.
Obviously.
I mean, 3 weeks ago, Logical Larry was beating us over the head with this team's headed for the national championship, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. And now, you know, they struggle a couple weeks, they lose a game, and it's like, this guy's done. It's been figured out. Let's move on to whatever's next. Like, I don't think it wasn't as good as it looked in the first 4 weeks. It's not been as bad as it's looked the last couple weeks. Like, you got to figure out where the in-between is here over the next, you know, X number of weeks.
That's my motto, buddy. Never as good as it seems, never as bad as it seems.
Yeah, it's definitely somewhere in the middle. Obviously, Danny and Dondi have a stern relationship with the NCAA. What does their relationship with Sankey look like? Better, worse, or same as the previous regimes? I think Dondi Plowman has a better relationship with Greg Sankey than any non-athletic director has had with the SEC office ever. The last one I think that had this kind of relationship with the SEC office is probably Doug Dickey, back when Roy Kramer was the commissioner. I've just seen Dondi Plowman interact with Greg Sankey. I've seen her interact with people. She's on a bunch of committees with the SEC. I think there's a ton of respect there between those two. And I think Danny White and Greg Sankey have a lot of respect for each other as well. But I think where Dondi's at is different than what we've seen from previous chancellors at the University of Tennessee in terms of her impact, her relationship, her involvement in the league office. That's my viewing on it.
Don't you think also, Hubbard, it's like, Greg, I'm sorry we had to meet this way, but Dondi, I'm really impressed with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and I mean, if you're Greg Sankey and the chancellor at a school, and listen, I was critical of her when she did it. She just walked in and said, "Listen, this guy screwed up a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm blowing this whole thing up because this is not how it's supposed to work here." I mean, if you're Greg Sankey, you're like, hey. Sounds good to me, man. What do you need? Whatever you need, I'll show up and support. You know, I'll be at the committee hearing, but you know, you're in charge of it. So, I think there's a respect angle there that you haven't seen because she was so involved in navigating Tennessee through all those waters. How do you help Nico stop seeing, feeling ghost in live action? It's like the script sack at Oklahoma hurt his psyche, and he's been playing scared since. Anybody think that? You think he's seeing ghost, feeling ghost because of the pressure?
I think seeing ghosts would be an upgrade for this offensive line because they're not ghosts. They're actually in his lap more times than they're not, right? I mean, am I mistaken? Like, seeing ghosts is in a clean pocket and you're just running for your life for no reason. I don't think we've seen that from Nico as much as he's been sacked 10 times the last 3 weeks because of the pressure, and they got to get better there. I mean, so offensive line's got to get better, scheme's got to get better, everything's got to get better.
So you're telling me it's not the scene from Talladega Nights where Ricky Bobby's on fire and he's running around the track?
No, there is actual fire.
I mean, I think a couple of times he's probably bailed the pocket a little bit early, but I don't think that's uncommon for a young quarterback. I mean, I don't think he's bailing out of the pocket because he's afraid of getting hit. I think he's bailing out of the pocket because he feels like it's collapsing. Maybe he's got a little more time than he thought he had there. And but I don't think suddenly he has no pocket presence and all those things. I mean, listen, I mean, Rob, he's a young quarterback who's facing football adversity for the first time in his life. Right. I mean, when you're in high school and you can do what he can do, it's probably not been real hard. This is different, and you know, he's got to get through it, and Tennessee's got to help him get through it by whatever that looks like.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with Grant. I mean, I don't think he's, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not in his head. I'm not watching all 22 film. I don't think he's seeing ghosts. I think he's seeing big guys run at it with bad intentions.
Last question. Why is Vol 24? Is this the game that Nico gets 7 to 10 design runs?
It better be. You better be emptying the clip to do everything you can to win this football game. And if that means running the quarterback designed or not designed, I think you need to do it. Whatever you can give this offense a shot in the arm, do it.
I agree. I think you empty it. I agree.
You don't want to get him hurt, but healthy Nico down the stretch, if you're playing irrelevant games,
doesn't matter.
It's great that he's healthy, but you want to be playing games that matter. You better be trying to get to that point, doing everything you can.
I mean, Rob, he had a 10-yard gain on his own read where he kept it, and you kind of thought, okay, there you go. And then they didn't come back to it. I mean, it's kind of, you know, I don't know if it's him. I don't know if it's calls. I don't know kind of what the deal is with that. But
with the way he acts about contact, I don't think it's him. I mean, he's not nearly contact adverse like Joe Milton was. I mean, I've seen Nico on a couple occasions put his shoulder down where I would have said, ooh, you know, don't do that. Or, you know, he does not seem shy to me about trying to get that extra yard if, you know, given the situation.
Yeah. I've been saying for a couple of weeks that his legs have to be involved, particularly when you're playing odd fronts with all the RPO games. So we'll see if that happens this week. I don't think he needs to ever carry it 15, 20 times, but 5 to 10, particularly in some critical situations when you got to make a play, would seem to make a lot of sense. So we'll see. Lots of stuff coming up on the website to get you ready for Tennessee and Alabama throughout the rest of the week. Obviously, we got a great promo going on right now as well, so be sure and check that out. If you're watching this on YouTube or you're listening to it on your favorite podcast platform and you're not a part of VolQuest.com, you're certainly missing out on a ton of great content from everybody. So I encourage you to check it out. I encourage you to give us a look. You will not be disappointed. This is a big one on Saturday for a lot of reasons, but certainly it starts with the fact that it's Tennessee and Alabama in October, and we'll have it all for you this week going leading up to the game and full coverage after the game as well. For Austin Price, Rob Lewis, and Grant Ramey, I'm Brent Hubbs. Thank you so much for joining us on the Mailbag edition of the podcast presented by our good friends at Exterior Home Solutions.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.